This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And today our Week in Review takes on the year ahead, including a new governor for Massachusetts.
Our next governor, Charlie Baker.
We'll assess the opportunities and challenges ahead for incoming Governor Charlie Baker and the legacy of outgoing Governor Deval Patrick.
There are other things I wish we had accomplished, but when I consider the fact that, you know, we're pointed in the right direction and have a promising future, I feel pretty good.
Also, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh begins his second year in office with promises kept and much work still left to do.
Truly, it's one of the most important things we've accomplished this year, of getting the extended day, because it's about future of young people in the city and putting them on a path to success.
Plus, predictions for 2015.
I am not running for president. Do you want me to put an exclamation point at the end?
Like she says, Elizabeth Warren won't run for president, but people will keep asking her. The Patriots will be Super Bowl champs again, and the Red Sox will go from first to worst to something better than worst. And joining us now to talk about all that and more at the start of this new year are Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. Welcome, Jim, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Also with us, Tom Keen, former city councilor and columnist for the Boston Globe. Tom, great to have you as well.
Thanks.
So let's begin with the passing of the baton on Beacon Hill later this week. On Wednesday night, after 8 years in the corner office, Governor Deval Patrick will complete his eighth year in office and take the traditional lone walk down the State House staircase, clearing the way for Charlie Baker's inauguration on Thursday. In a moment, we'll talk about the future, the challenges, the opportunities that await the new governor. But first, let's talk a bit about Deval Patrick's record and legacy. And let's go back 8 years. Here he is delivering his inaugural address as the state's 71st governor, its first African-American governor, and the first Democrat after 16 years of Republican governorship. He said, "It's time for change, and we are that change."
For every mother living month to month, for every student struggling to get through school, for every dad working two jobs and wondering which one is going to be shipped overseas, for every fisherman wondering whether this year's catch will do, for every immigrant wondering whether the American dream is a myth, for every teacher, every bus driver, every government clerk, every firefighter, every small business owner, doing your best and wondering whether anyone appreciates you, for every one of God's children who calls Massachusetts home, let's rebuild this city on the hill and make it shine again.
Governor Deval Patrick speaking 8 years ago. So, gentlemen, I mean, depending upon where you are on the political spectrum, you can agree, disagree, approve, disapprove of Deval Patrick, but he knew how to give a speech.
Well, boy, he sure did. We're not going to be hearing that from Charlie Baker.
Tom Keene, let me start with you, because 8 years ago, he outlined some big challenges, including the idea that for too long, government exists to serve the powerful and well-connected only. How did he respond to maybe the big challenge that he laid out 8 years ago?
So I actually thought that the 8 years were relatively status quo. I mean, I think he did a good job. Particularly in terms of the economy, I think he's right that he sort of pointed things in the correct direction. We did better than the rest of the country for the most part in terms of making our way through the Great Recession. So I think that in general, he pointed in the right direction. I don't think you saw a wholesale makeover of state government. And in fact, I think if you were to point to state government itself, that's really where his failings lay, that he did not pay enough attention to kind of the knitting of state government. And, you know, you had probably an increase in the bureaucracy, you had an increase in the number of kind of hacks there, and you saw fallout from everywhere, Department of Children and Families to the probation department and so on.
Yeah. Jim Sturgis, Tom sort of outlined there, lofty vision, great rhetoric, but a mixed record. What's your view?
You know, I think that Deval's record has been one of two Deval Patricks, and that is in the first term. I think there were some really good things that were done. He actually was managing. He had an A-team on board. Jay Gonzalez, who's managing the state budget, is a very effective manager. The second term, with folks like Glenn Shore, who are not nearly as good, did not do as good of a job. And that's not just pulling out one person, but across the board, I think they weren't really watching over the agency, so you had a number of different scandals. But let's remember the first term. Group Insurance Commission insurance was made available to local employees, saving localities probably about $100 to $150 million a year. It's a wonderful thing that people have been thinking about for quite some time. At the same time, I would say that you know, Governor Patrick is taking credit for Massachusetts being number one in the nation in education. Well, we were that in 2005. We were already in the top six countries in the world. We participate as a country in international tests in math and science. The same thing on healthcare. Our healthcare, our health insurance reforms from 2006 already by 2007 had reduced uninsurance from about 10% to under 4.5%. So taking credit for those probably is a bit of a reach. But I'd say I would agree with Tom where he said Massachusetts feels like it's on the right path.
Yeah,
I think and that, I think you have to say, well, at least that didn't change or it got better a little bit.
Right. And I actually think if you look back through the string of governors, we've actually had a string of governors who have kept us on a fairly good path, particularly in terms of, you know, where a state economy goes. Unlike at a presidential level where some decisions can really influence the economy on a year-to-year basis, at the state level, this is a long-term project. And I think previous governors pointed us the right direction. Deval Patrick kept us pretty much on that path.
You know, it's interesting going back and listening to that speech. I read the transcript of the whole speech, and he outlined some specific challenges 8 years ago, including these: an exodus of young workers, violence in the streets, a struggling middle class, the scourge of drugs, failing schools, soaring college and healthcare costs, crumbling roads and bridges. He talked about all of that. And, you know, I was struck by those are challenges that are still with us today. I'm not suggesting, therefore, his fault. But, I mean, it's just interesting how these challenges are vexing. They're hard to solve. And they're still there.
They definitely are. And I'd say one that we missed that he did do well, and I think is the crumbling bridges. He had a really wonderful set of programs to actually the Fast 14 north of Boston on 93. I think he was a great proponent of addressing that issue. I think he did much more than anyone had actually thought. On the other side, you know, you think about casinos when he was elected. Did anyone ever think that Deval Patrick would actually push for casinos? Is that our economic development strategy? And, you know, one final point, this is something that's going to vex Charlie Baker throughout his term or terms, and that is we're doing really well in Greater Boston, but let's not forget that Holyoke and New Bedford and Fall River and Springfield and Lawrence all have unemployment rates above 10% and have for the better part of a decade. So we've become sort of a tale of two cities in this state.
Interesting.
It hasn't really
East
changed.
East versus
that.
West. And you're absolutely right. Then the differences between East and West have actually grown. Yeah.
So let's listen to Deval Patrick one more time before we move on to Charlie Baker. He spoke to Bob Oakes not long ago for his final interview with WBUR as governor. Made the point that Massachusetts weathered the recession better than most states. This past November, the state posted its biggest monthly job gain in more than 3 years. So here he is, just a clip from that interview.
There are other things I wish we had accomplished, but when I consider the fact that legislatively they've had a couple of the most productive terms in 30 or 40 years, that we have nation-leading results on so many levels, and that, you know, we're pointed in the right direction and have a promising future, I feel pretty good.
All right. Feeling pretty good for being pointed in the right direction. So one last question, though. Tom, both of you, I'll start with you, Tom. Next, what happens next for Deval Patrick? Where do we think he's going?
So I don't think Deval Patrick's going to be running for president this time around.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he's setting himself up for something. He's relatively young. He's putting together a political action committee. He's, I would guess, going to be trying to get more of a national presence. And you could really see him running 4 years from now or 8 years from now for president. But I do not think he is done.
Do you agree, Jim?
I completely agree. Yeah. I think the fact that he took John Walsh over to run his PAC, and John Walsh is enormously talented organizer, tells you something about how important it was for him to set up that PAC and the vision that he has for that PAC. I'd say it's in 4 years he's running.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd wait eight. But I think we're...
You don't set up a PAC if you don't have future political aspirations, right?
Right.
No.
Yeah. He's running in eight if Hillary Clinton wins this time around, or if a Democrat does. But, you know, if it's a Jeb Bush or a Republican, you know, who takes it, then clearly I think 4 years from now he's going to be out in the primaries.
All right. Well, less than a week left of the Patrick administration. Then it's on to Charlie Baker, who will be sworn in on Thursday. We heard some of the soaring rhetoric of Patrick's inaugural. What tone do you expect Charlie Baker, to strike, Jim?
I think he will strike a tone of competence, and it's the one thing I hope he doesn't talk about, because I think we've gotten to this point, maybe we're so jaded about state government that competence is actually a positive. That can win you an election. That's basically the job description, but you want vision on top of that. Things I'm hoping he'll talk about are a few things here. One is people matter more than government, and that is we have much more spending than we did before. The percentage of growth in state spending far outstrips household income growth. That's a problem, I think. The number of jobs we've seen on the right track, but again, as we were saying just a second ago, it's uneven across the state. I want to make sure that he is also talking about a fairer Massachusetts where we see economic activity across the entire state. I hope he talks about DCF and caring for the vulnerable. That's not just more money. That's actually thinking about how you do case management in these institutions, how you make sure you're actually delivering product. And the last thing is I would love to hear him talk about Massachusetts reassuming its historic role of leader in national policy. We've gotten to the place where in education, in healthcare, in so many domains, we've stepped back and said, let's follow the feds or let's follow a different state. Mm. We've always kind of charged out ahead. We've always punched above our weight. I'd love to see us do the same thing all over again, education, healthcare, and other areas.
Tom Keene, what's your view of the coming inaugural?
So I think that there's going to be let's just talk about the run-up to the inaugural. Yeah. I thought the run-up to the inaugural has been interesting because of the people that he has selected for his cabinet, yeah. who mostly to a man and woman have been very well-known names, are names that give people an awful lot of comfort, and are names that that sort of inspire this feeling that there will be competence. And I realize competence isn't enough, but there is a feeling with the remains of the Deval Patrick administration that competence is going to be important. The second key thing is Charlie's going to be walking into a very serious budget deficit, and that's going to really color a lot for the first year. And it may be that Massachusetts Taxpayers Association is correct in that it's $700 or $800 million in terms of a deficit. And if so, he's going to really be scrambling there. There is no way. I mean, it is actually a puzzle to me, and I'm only echoing what Baker said, but it is a puzzle to me that at a time where the economy is doing relatively well, that we're in a deficit situation. We should be in a deficit. You would think of deficit situation during a recession. That makes a lot of sense. That's when you have to tap a rainy day fund. But to have that at this point really seems off.
Yeah. Now, so the Massachusetts Taxpayer Association says the figure is something like $750 million. The outgoing Patrick administration says it's not nearly that. They put the number at like $330
Correct.
Million. Dollars. But, Jim, what kind of challenge do you see that as posing for Baker? Either way, let's say the number falls halfway in between.
I think it's closer to the Mass Taxpayers Foundation number, and it's simply because a lot of the costs associated with the health connector are skyrocketing, at least $200 million additional beyond what the Patrick administration is saying, and probably even more, like $400 million, which would get you that $750 million number. So what that means is in half a year, half a fiscal year, you've got to close a hole that's maybe $600-700 million. That's like an annualized basis, $1.2 billion. That's what would be considered a huge cut. That's something I'm going to have to scramble every which way to deal with. And I know that Baker's made a commitment to not making further cuts to local aid. So where do you go for it? That's a huge challenge.
Yeah, big challenge. Well, let's hear Charlie Baker's voice. Because of the way last November's very close election turned out with Martha Coakley not conceding until the following morning, we never really heard a full-throated Baker victory speech. But here he is the next day. He did speak to supporters at 1 o'clock in the morning of election night, and he was able to end on this note.
We can't wait to make this state sing from one end to the other, across the Commonwealth, in every region, in every town, in every community, to build the great Massachusetts that we all dream and hope for.
Governor-elect Charlie Baker, who of course takes office on Thursday. And Tom, you mentioned how the transition has gone, the appointment of some really interesting people. He also struck a real bipartisan note. I mean, I guess there are at least three Democrats so
yep.
far, right,
yeah.
in the cabinet. But I want to come back to this idea of how he'll contend with a Democratic legislature, especially if, you know, he hits a big sort of budget bump in the road, because he has promised not to raise taxes. So what does he do if we're really talking about budget crisis and he has to start talking about cutting services? Is that what could open up a rift between him and a Democratic legislature?
I mean, maybe, you know, the
it does seem to me that partisanship at the state level is really much more subdued than it is at the federal level, and that people are not as interested in scoring points off each other. I actually think that Baker, who remember was in Bill Weld's cabinet, probably will learn, take a lot of lessons from that in terms of how to work with the legislature. Ultimately, reps and senators have a real interest in closing the budget deficit as well. I just don't think party matters as much in something like this. And by the way, these are the same folks who will not want to see cuts to state and local to local aid. The same folks who know that if they vote for increases in taxes, that they will hear about it from their constituents within 2 years.
Right. Well, let's move on to a big story that starts this coming Monday. Unless the U.S. Court of Appeals intervenes, jury selection in the trial of the man, the accused Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev, is set to begin on Monday. He faces the death penalty for allegedly detonating two bombs at the marathon finish line back in 2013, killing three people, injuring more than 260. His lawyers want more time to prepare for the case. They also want the trial moved out of Boston, saying it won't be possible to impanel an impartial jury because of the widespread pretrial publicity. Earlier this week, Judge George O'Toole denied that request. So the trial will begin on Monday, unless, as we say, we get a decision from the appeals court that delays the trial. Your thoughts, gentlemen, on this? Well, first of all, the question posed by the defense, should the trial go ahead as scheduled on Monday? Jim, what do you think?
Well, when you go back to 1995 and the judge's decision in the case of Timothy McVeigh to move the venue, mm-hmm. it was based on the question of whether jurors could be impartial. And I think that is a real question. I think that Harvey Silverglades probably made the most convincing and the most articulate argument on that issue. That said, look, Harvey's barking up the wrong tree here if he thinks the feds will move it. There's just too much political risk to doing that. Eric Holder's tried to move different venues before, and it's really bit him in the backside. So there's no way it was going to happen. This is also very different in the sense that we have so much of this on film, that doing that, I think, would have surprised people a lot. I'm not saying it's the right decision, but I think anyone who thought we're going to see a venue change, I think, is wrong.
Well, you mentioned Harvey Silverglades. In that same piece today in the Globe, he also mentioned the complexity of the case, including a trove of some 10,000 pages of documents that were only turned over to the defense in mid-December. Tom, does that add up to a pretty strong reason to delay or move the trial?
I think it does. I mean, I disagree with Jim. It may be that it's not politically possible to move venues. I would have moved venues. I really think that that's important in this case. And I also really think it's important to give the attorneys time. It's not like Tsarnaev is going anywhere. Hmm. He's going to be around. We have the time to be able to do this. But what I do know is that you start to commit errors like this, you can see this reversed on appeal. And these are just the classic kind of things that the lawyers are going to appeal on.
Interesting. Well, as we sit here at this moment, jury selection scheduled to begin Monday on a trial that will go on for several months. Well, let's move on and talk about Boston and Mayor Marty Walsh. As Charlie Baker begins his first year in office, Walsh begins his second, so we can officially stop calling him the city's new mayor. And let's talk about...
No, you can only do that after a decade.
After a decade, right, yeah. In the book that Tom Menino wrote, yeah, I guess he'll be a new mayor for a long time. So let's talk about news from this past week. He announced a deal to cautiously venture into the land of longer school days in Boston. Elementary and middle school kids will get 40 extra minutes a day, which adds up to an extra month of reading, writing, and arithmetic. As they roll that out, eventually it will affect 40 schools in Boston. So here's how Walsh described this to us on Monday earlier this week.
We'll be able to do more around science, math, technology, have teachers do a lot more teacher training time for them to sit down and work together. We're putting together a puzzle here of pieces, different pieces, to make sure our district is the best in the country.
So folks have been pushing for a long time to have longer school days in Boston. Walsh called this a major achievement. How significant is it, Jim?
I think it's significant in the following way. To actually wrest that kind of concession from the unions is a big deal. It's 120 hours per year. It's almost like about 10% of the school year. If you ask me about the substance of this, adding 40 minutes a day depends completely on what they do with the time. And if they continue to do the same things with the time they're doing during the rest of the day, I'm not that convinced it's going to do that much. Some of the after-school programs, there were options for a lot of schools, like Citizen Schools runs a bunch of programs. They wouldn't fit in that 40-minute period, right? So they're not going to have access to this. So it's going to be run in school. The second thing I'd say is Lawrence has been undertaking some really important reforms as part of the receivership of the school system. And one of the things they've tried out is intensive February vacation instruction in math or in April or during the summer. And that seems to have more impact than adding on a dollop of minutes to the end of the day. And I just would hope that as part of this is enough flexibility to try some other stuff out, not just to say, hey, let's teach 40 more minutes doing the same thing we're doing right now. Because honestly, charter schools are doing such a good job with educating their kids, but it's not simply a function of, oh, let's press the button on more time. That's not going
to
do
it. Sure, it's only part of it. And in fairness to Walsh, he did call this just a start and said 40 extra minutes is just part of a much broader plan to do a whole bunch of other stuff to improve schools. But Tom, your response.
So you got to rethink the entire school day. And I really think that's where Jim's going on this one, that if you simply view this as tacking an extra period on, then it's not going to really get you that much, and the kids are just going to be exhausted. We have a relatively short day compared to other states right now in other jurisdictions. So the day certainly should be longer, but it actually has to be reconceived to see if you can actually make the instruction period valuable as opposed to, you know, we've got 40 more minutes, good, that's extra recess or whatever.
So let's talk very quickly, because I want to move on to our final thoughts about the coming year. But I just want to ask Marty Walsh, first year in office. That was a major campaign promise, that extra time for school. He got it done. He's left some other stuff unfinished. But Tom Keene, what's your view of his first year in office?
So I think if you tried to grade it, I probably would give him a B minus. I think he's done a good job. He had a number of stumbles coming out, I think, with the casinos where, you know, he refused to get involved with the commission in terms of trying to get some concessions for Boston was a huge mistake on his part. I think he's really – there's been some things with personnel decisions that have really bothered me in terms of how he has handled them. And yet, you know, he's assumed the reins of government. He has slowly gotten out of the mode of being a state legislator where he needs to collaborate, and he's increasingly becoming his own man. One of the things that he has delivered on, which he promised he would and which many people, including myself, doubted, is that he really has been very effective, or he seems to be pretty effective in terms of trying to manage the city's budget and not go crazy in terms of concessions to unions.
All right. B minus. Jim Sturgis?
I'm going to avoid the test question, and I'll just say, look, there's some things that really impressed me about Mayor Walsh so far, and that is the cleanup at the BRA, I think, has been enormously important and bodes well, because this is a fellow who understands construction and is going to build, and frankly, his legacy, you can already see him sort of tracing it out. We may see some of the more building that we've seen any time in our past quarter century, and we're going to see the skyline change and so much of the city change. That's in his own interest, given his background. It's something he knows about, and actually securing somebody good for the BRA and then seeing them undertake those reforms, making public all the mistakes of the past, which is also politically a benefit, that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, on the firefighter deal, I think that was probably a pretty raw deal for the city, unlike, I think, what the Globe came out and said. I think this teacher concessions are probably a pretty good one. I probably don't bemoan changes in personnel as much as some other folks. I just think after 20 years, changing around some of the folks is probably not a bad idea.
All right. We have literally a minute left, so I'm going to hold you guys, if I can, to like 20 seconds each. This is where we usually do our hubbub, but instead we're going to ask you for the big or little story or the prediction for 2015, the story you're going to be watching that we might not have talked about yet. Tom, let me ask you.
HBO Go could be revolutionary, could be the thing that finally tips us over to being able to cut the cord on cable and satellite. And
it couldn't come soon enough.
And it can't come soon enough. I'm paying way too much. And all you need is an internet connection. That's all you should need for TV.
I love it. All right. HBO Go, go. Your turn, Jim.
I think with the Republicans assuming control of Congress, surprisingly, this might be the year that testing gets its real test. And what I mean by is K-12 testing. They are talking about changes No Child Left Behind, which would change the face of testing, perhaps. And we're going to see a fight here in Massachusetts as well.
All right. Well, here's mine. Will Elizabeth Warren run for president or not? She keeps saying, I'm not running. I'm not running. I'm not running. I still want to know if she's going to run. So that's what I'm looking forward to in 2015, to finding an answer to that question.
She's running.
Tom Keene. All right. There's the prediction. Former city councilor, columnist for the Boston Globe, and Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Thank you both. Thank you for all your help this year and last year, rather, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Stay with us. Much more. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.